The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
This is Winners and Sinners, where we look back on the week that was, but with a few twists. And I'm delighted to say that this week I am joined by Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather, John Purcell, who's the head of KCLR and the chair of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, and Anne Healy, who is the owner of Biddy's Good Luck Horseshoes. You're all so very welcome to the programme. I'm going to start with you first, John, because this is a really interesting one. This is this decision in Australia by the government that they are going to ban social media for under 16s in Ireland. And for you, that makes them a winner.
They're winners in my book, yeah. I mean, it's not a perfect piece of legislation. It's pretty tough on Australian young people. I was just thinking a lot of those kids would have grown up during COVID, would have got very used to their phones, and now just it's gone. But I think it's a necessary step. But I'm not underestimating the trauma. I'm not underestimating the challenges. It's been challenged by Reddit. I saw Mr. Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, going on TV. And if I was a 15-year-old, I would have thrown the TV out the window or my phone or whatever device I was looking at him on, because he was going, "Oh, kids, take up a new hobby and play
excellent
sports."
Excellent accent there.
And I was just going, don't know if that's the right thing. But, you know, young people will need support in this thing. It would be like a withdrawal symptom that they've got. But I think
we can imagine any of us here as adults who have our mobile phones, who have our social media platforms, much and all, perhaps as we try and stay off them, many of us adults are equally as addicted. And I think I would find it very, very difficult if somebody almost overnight took that away from me. It would be a period of adjustment.
Yeah, so would I. But John, I'm wondering if 14 would be a better age. I think 16 is quite old, and bearing in mind that they have actually grown up with it as well.
Yeah, look, I think they could debate it and they could debate it. At least they've introduced it,
yeah,
and it'll have that. It'll start. They may amend it, but I think at least they've started doing something. So I think that's positive. I do think something needs to be done about adults as well, because I was at busy traffic lights in Kilkenny City, and I looked at this, I'd say it was an 18 or a 2-year-old child who was about to kind of run off the footpath, and I was going like, geez, anyone looking at that, looking after that child? And then I saw his father was looking at his phone, and the child was pulling at the father, and the father was just more or less telling the child, just leave me alone, I'm looking at my phone here. And so I think it's a public health issue, really, and it'll be regarded as that.
Yeah, yeah. I have to be honest, yeah. My 6-year-old put a sign up in the bedroom this week, no phones during reading time.
Excellent. Well, there is a movement.
I've never felt as guilty in my whole life. And I thought, you are right. That is me with my addiction, taking out my phone, the poor child, while she's getting her book or putting on her pyjamas, probably checking the news as I do every 10 seconds. But she actually had to put up a sign to say, stop doing that
you
now.
And it
was a real moment.
Join the smartphone free parenting movement that apparently is going. I was reading during the week, there's an Irish movement, the Smartphone Parenting Association or organisation.
Yeah, I've read about those who are just basically really being stringent, I suppose, as parents to not let their children have access to mobile phones and to social
media.
Without
being spoiled sports.
What about you, Alan? Would you like to see that introduced here in Ireland? Would you like to see the Irish government follow suit?
Absolutely, I think so. I think I work in technology, and I think the development of the technology and the algorithms has really become a big issue. Like, years ago, what you could access on your mobile phone is very different to now. And the problem is with the algorithms, they continue to feed, you know, harmful information to children. And I know from interacting with some other parents and that wouldn't be as tech savvy as me, wouldn't have the phones locked down, wouldn't have the Wi-Fi locked down, that a lot of children have unfettered internet access. And that's really the problem, because
despite all the warnings that are out there.
Yeah, but
we've had multiple conversations, I know, across News Talk on this issue for years now.
I know.
Still, parents haven't quite got to grips with it.
No, and a lot of parents, the router in the corner is just something that's turned on, and Wi-Fi is either on or off. But there's a lot of things you can do. And, you know, they don't require a lot of technical know-how. They do do require a little bit. So I think really it is a really good move. I think the problem that you have to be realistic about when John's, or you know, whether 16, 14, you know, is a question, because the problem there is that at 14 or 13, 14, they're going to be using VPNs. They're going to be using their, you know, they're going to get their father, will you look at this phone for a moment? And then it'll scan his face and it'll approve, and they won't even know why they've done that. So there's always going to be phones. There's always going to be ways around it. Like if you look at the UK, when they brought in the age verification for pornography, the use of VPNs has gone through the roof. Literally every person in the UK is now connecting to a VPN in Ireland to look at pornography.
So it's very difficult to get, I suppose, the perfect legislation, but you would still like to see some moves in that direction.
I think it would even be a good signal to parents to make them maybe realise that this is a problem, and maybe make them more conscious of what their children are looking at online, because it's a huge issue.
Well, I suppose whose responsibility is it, do you think? Is it the young person's? Is it teachers? Is it parents? Or is it the government?
But is it lack of knowledge as well on the parents' part? And I think that's probably, Alan, what some of it could be as well. Now, I probably don't agree with the 16. I would say 14 is good enough.
But the way legislation works, you could be hanging around for another 3 years.
True.
Debating it.
True. Yeah. But I think sometimes it can be the parents that just don't know the capability of what's on the phone. Mm. And that's probably a problem.
Do we have a responsibility then?
Oh, we do.
As parents, to go out
Absolutely.
There and educate ourselves.
Well, it's very
Absolutely.
Difficult for the single parent to stop their child using a phone if they're the only person in the class that's not getting, that doesn't have a phone. You know what I mean?
So, yes, so what we need is a whole society shift here.
A whole society shift, you know, because it is a health issue, I think.
Okay, let's move on to your other winner this week, Alan. I'm going to guess by the top that you are wearing right now that you are an Aston Villa fan.
You could say that. Yeah, it's been like, look, as a long-suffering Aston Villa fan, there's very few weeks when I have my mates are either Liverpool, United, my two brothers are Liverpool.
There's a so very, you've had some hard afternoons.
Yeah, and I'm in the WhatsApp group for the last 2 weeks and I am just smiling every time I open it. And to win in that fashion last Saturday, like,
even they beat Arsenal, just in case anybody's wondering what the big win was. Arsenal, yeah. Of course, top of the table, having a fantastic season.
And top of the Champions League as well. I mean, they're flying high. So Emer thought something serious had happened in the sitting room because she'd never heard me scream like that before. But to win it in the 95th minute after playing really well, it was just unbelievable. And look, we have West Ham and then we have Man United and we have Chelsea and we have Arsenal. We've won 8 in a row. Can we win 11 in a row?
Are you trying to tell me now I think you're title contenders?
Absolutely.
This has really gone to your head,
Alan. Look, we have to run while we have it because I don't know how long it's going to last. We could be looking at a very different table in another 4 games, but it was amazing. And it's funny, no matter what sport you follow, it can bring you real joy, because Emer couldn't really understand why I was so, you know, happy and why I was jumping around the place like
Emer
a child.
Emer is your wife, just to be clear, because anyone's wondering.
The guy who isn't cutting his hair until Man United kind of win 5 in a row must be mad jealous with Aston Villa.
Well, it's mad to see how things have changed. And I mean, look at the Mo Salah news just breaking that he's back in the squad for the game, and the whole dynamic between Arne Slot and Mo Salah and the power. And I mean, to have a Liverpool team that won the league, spent $500 million, and is now there. I mean, it's a fascinating league this year. And I think Arsenal, if there's any Arsenal fans here, I'm sorry, but Arsenal are always going to have a wobble. So it's anybody's to win.
Do you invest in sport like this?
No.
In a team? No, Anne.
No, and come here.
Clear no.
Sorry, I was looking at Alan's top when he came in and I was saying, it's a bit colourful, isn't it? And I'm only after realising now what it is.
And he's going to wear it to bed.
Yeah,
he's going to wear
absolutely.
It Christmas Day mask. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not coming off. Yeah. Are you invested, John, in a team like this?
No. I have a very good friend who's soccer mad who multi-screens. And I do my best to input intelligent comments, but they're few and far between. Now, darts, I can actually get a bit of a grip on darts. And there's a local man, Steve Lennon, is taking the stage in Ali Pally tonight. But it's the time of year when I dust off my Sid Waddell quotes. famous darts commentator.
Are you surprised by the amount, I suppose, of energy that football fans can put into their team?
I think it's a passion. You know, as Alan said, like, he's very invested in it, and there's the highs and the lows, and I know a lot of Leeds United supporters, and it's a great thing for people to, you know, pick a team and stick with them through thick and thin. And I'm always interested in how people actually choose the different teams.
How did Alan, you come to choose
Was it
Villa?
Steve Staunton?
I was born in 81, so Italia 90 was a big thing. And when I started supporting Aston Villa, Ray Houghton, Steve Staunton, Andy Townsend, Paul McGrath were all playing for Aston Villa. And it was amazing. I went over to Villa Park years and years later.
But Roy Keane was playing for Man United. You could have picked them.
We won't bring
might
up Saipan.
It would have been a bit easier.
But people go around Villa Park still with God and number four on the back of their jersey. And that's Paul McGrath they're talking about. There's a podcast I listen to, and it's called For the Love of Paul McGrath, For the Love of God podcast.
And we do love him. I want to come to you, Anne, because you had a lovely winner this week. It was somebody who had received a gift from your company and had gotten contact to say how happy they were about this. These small acts of kindness, why do they resonate so strongly with business owners?
I'm a small business, right? We make really, I suppose, hands-on gifts from Genuine Horseshoes. And at the minute, we are really, really busy. And you sometimes forget the power that a gift can actually have. So I got a call during the week from a lady who was after receiving a horseshoe. And the special thing about it was, I suppose, it had a photograph of her mam who had passed away the year previous. It was a gift from her aunt. And I think when she rang me, she said that she cried when she got it first, but then it was a message that she needed to get herself together and get on with her life. And you know what? I sometimes forget the power when I make a gift and send it out, what it means to somebody. And I suppose I felt that we often do things and we don't realise, you know, what they can mean to the person that you've done it for or that you give it to or whatever. For me, it was, you know, it was a moment of saying, oh God, like, that really is lovely and it's happening out there.
And it made you feel...
Oh, my God, it made me feel so good. And it brought me back down to say, what I'm doing, I'm on the right path.
And all the hard work at this time of year and all the pressure and all the stress and all the long days.
Yeah, it's actually worth it.
Yeah, and it just shows you too, doesn't it? The importance sometimes of just letting somebody know that you like the work that they've done and saying a simple thanks.
Yeah. But also a handmade Irish gift. Mm. You know, we're very, in this society, very much ordering off Chinese websites, and gifts are very kind of come and go, as where when you get something that's, you know, has meaning and is something that somebody has put thought into choosing, but somebody has put effort into locally making it. I think it's a great day, and it should be a great promotion for Shop Local this Christmas, you know.
Mm-hmm. Completely. And I suppose I would say that anybody that buys a horseshoe gift has actually put thought into it. Mm-hmm. So it's coming from a place of the heart. Yes. You know, and that's the reality of it.
It wasn't a last minute panic buy for somebody, which is lovely.
No.
All right, look, we're going to take a quick break there. That was the winners section. Coming up, the sinners. And you are listening to Winners and Sinners with John Purcell, the head of KCLR, Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather, and Anne Healy, the owner of Biddy's Good Luck Horseshoes. So we did our winners of the week. It's time now to look at our losers of the week, our sinners. I'm going to come to you first, Anne. So you tried to use a little bit of the cupola focale, which we were all being encouraged to do to keep the language alive and to try and use it in an everyday setting. And it didn't go that well for you, did it?
No. Oh, Kira, I was really knocked down, so I was. So for the last 8 months, I have been trying to resurrect my Leave and Cert Irish, which is a very long time ago. Okay, so using it, I have done a little bit of work with Fáirs na Gael because I'm intending to change my website in the new year. Okay? So I have been, when I'm writing a note, I'll put a little Irish word on it as well, but I will also say Conestatho or, you know, Slán or whatever. So I always throw in the cupola focal. So on Saturday at Yule Fest, which I am for the next few weekends.
Great event.
Yes, absolutely. I was saying Slán and Gurumila Mahagut to a couple that had bought a few horseshoes from me. And this man was standing listening to me. And when they moved off, he started full-blown an Irish conversation, which I just stood back and said, "Conas a thátú, Lí Higgum," in my best Kilkenny accent. And then he says, "You mean you only have cúpla focal and it's for show?" And I'm saying to myself, "Oh my God, where do I go with this?" He walked away. He actually walked away from me.
And were you upset by it? And were you sort of?
I didn't open my mouth for the rest of the day in Irish, and that's the truth, because I was actually taken back, to tell you the honest God's truth, because I was delighted with myself. Like, people were actually responding to me. I got a bottle of wine on some Saturday morning from an American couple who said I was the first person that had spoken a little Irish to them. Would you believe that? Imagine, they came back. They were after buying horseshoes to take home. They came back and gave me a bottle of wine.
Because they finally got to hear the language.
Yes.
It's sad to hear that, because I think for a lot of people, the difficulty with the language, John, is that we don't have confidence to speak it.
Yeah,
and we have
and
the
that
few words,
it.
But
that
we're nervous
it.
About
yeah.
it.
Yes.
I've talked to people who have fluent Irish and asked them about doing stuff on the radio, and their response has been, "No, I'd be nervous of doing it because the criticism that I would receive from people who are absolutely militant about official versions of grammar." And I think that kind of, you know, if you want a living language, you have to let it breathe. And trying to do that is why I went to school probably for my primary and secondary education, and I'm not fluent in Irish because of these small-minded attitudes, and it undermines people's
confidence.
And
the one thing, actually, having a child now learning Irish at school, that we're being told as parents is throw in the odd word, you know, close that Doris or whatever it is.
Make
I have very
effort.
Basic Irish, but if you just even use one or two words, you will get more confident with it.
Well, my daughter goes to a Gael school, and her mother's a Gael goer. She went to Gael school in Gael Cláiste, so I'm the odd one out in the house. So it's the opposite in my house. I'm trying to get them to speak English to me, and they often have these Irish conversations, and given by the eyes they give each other, Ciara, my ears are burning.
I have a funny one. My beloved is going to kill me for this, but I remember her collecting her kids from Gael school one time, and she was leaving, waving off to the headmaster, and she said, "Slán go Joe," and I said, "I think that means goodbye forever."
She was trying. I want to move to your sinner of the week, and it's Donald Trump, and I suppose more specifically his new national security strategy, including, I presume, the interview off the back with Politico, where he was just so critical of Europe. He really isn't a fan, is he?
Can I just preface it by saying I think that, you know, Storm Bram was raging when I was thinking about this, and it seemed like a good idea at the time, but bringing up Donald Trump on a Friday evening in a pub with people wearing Santa hats feels like a bit of a party pooper. But seriously, I do think that the US national security strategy that actually was published on the White House website, and which I actually read, is a profoundly amazing line in the sand for how the world is operated, because he's all but saying that they want to topple Europe as it is at the moment. They're washing their hands of, you know, transnational organisations. Under that scenario, you might as well say goodbye to the United Nations if Donald Trump gets his way. He's barefacedly saying that the US will interfere in internal European politics. It's got the most naive version of peacemaking that you ever saw in your entire life, which is a license for disaster on the world stage.
But this has all really forced Europe, hasn't it? Maybe now
it
to finally forge strategic independence from the US.
Well, we want to hurry up, I think, because I think it comes back. We talked about social media and the time it has taken to do something about that. Donald Trump is only in office for the second time since last January, just 10 months, and he's reshaped the world. Europe needs to really act very quickly, and Ireland needs to act very quickly as well. And I think it's a loser document from my point of view, but it's real and it's got huge implications. It's got implications for Ireland's trade outlook, for our way of life, for you name it. It's just, I think it's profoundly serious. And I think part of the problem is that Donald Trump goes off and he publishes a document like that, and then he's on to Venezuela, and then he's on to something else, and then it'll be something else. And people just forget. Another aspect of it that is just shocking is the complete abdication of any kind of moral outlook, because it's all about money and what's good for business and blah-de-blah. And we're all, you know, not we're all, but we all rely on business, and business is important. But there's a complete absence of any type of moral responsibility. We saw USAID just pulled. The impact on people is just terrible. So I know it's the season of goodwill, but there's not a lot of goodwill towards anybody in that pathetic document.
No, and there's a lot in that to be dissected in more detail. But unfortunately, we have run out of time here. My thanks to John Purcell, to Alan O'Reilly, and to Anne Healy. That is it from us today on The Hard Shoulder. I just have time to say congratulations to Darren Smith from Clare, who is today's winner of a two-night stay in Inchidoney Island Lodge and Spa. My thanks to Fred, to Breach, to everyone here in Malsard's beautiful bar and pub for being such great hosts, and to everyone at Guinness today for being behind this. Thanks also to the team here in Kilkenny and back at base. And of course, thank you for being here, for being in our live audience, for being so warm and generous to the Hard Shoulder team. And thank you at home for listening. I will be back with you live from Marconi House again on Monday. They're taking me out of the country, sending me back up to the city, reluctantly, I should have to say. But I will be live from 4 p.m. on Dublin. Until then, have a fabulous weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.